djmcloud.com. Of the podcast, episode number 39. It is July 18th 2012, and you're listening to the DJM Cloud podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown, and with Jessica.
Hi everybody.
So we're looking at this video of this guy, General William Boykin, retired. Yeah, so apparently General Boykin is going around and talking to a bunch of right wingers, and he goes in. Now I have a clip. I'll play that in a second. The clip, comprises just part of this. This speech that was recorded and put online by the People for the American Way. And you can see the link to that in the show notes at djmcloud.com. And Boykin goes on this fucking rant about liberation theology, Marxism, atheism. But this is the more pertinent part at the beginning.
Visits that the Muslim Brotherhood has made to the White House and President Obama's acting as a catalyst between Libya and the Arab Spring and Egypt. Is he a member of the Muslim Brotherhood?
You talking about our president?
President Obama.
Yeah, let me tell you something that you probably don't know. And my answer is, I don't know.
So that's why the former general who... At a different time, he talked about his army of God, and he talked about how explicitly Christian views of America's claim superiority. Like, this is a guy that has this long history of religious extremism, and he was doing that while he was a high-ranking officer in the military in the Bush administration.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of close ties going on there, and, you know, digging deeper into what his motives are. You know, it's a little unclear.
Well, there's a lot of fanatical people out there that keep pushing all this bullshit about Obama, about all this birther stuff. That idiot sheriff in the Phoenix area, Joe Arpaio, is still throwing around all that garbage about Obama's birth certificate, which is like what he's saying is totally false. Here's another clip. This is Alex Jones.
A bunch of political operatives, including big, high-level, mainline Republican operatives that work for both these guys now, in there. Look, I've given money to Ron Paul and Rand Paul. I get now Republican fundraising letters from every Republican out there, basically, because they sold the list, folks. I mean, it's just a full-on merger with the mainline Republicans.
And, you know, I think that it's extremely amusing that Alex Jones is talking about Ron and Rand Paul making a quote-unquote merger with the mainline Republicans, as he calls them. Like, Ron Paul hasn't been a vehicle for Republican, power the entire time he's been on the political stage. This is a guy who's been a loyal Republican, and, you know, all this stuff that he says, all the, attempts at kind of provocative talk. It was really just a marketing strategy, and the guy is just another stupid Republican. That's what I've been saying, but it's really funny that these people that have been, you know, shilling for him for so long are really just getting to that point, you know, like they're just totally admitting it and then getting angry about it.
I think it also sounds like maybe a strategy that they're going after the undecided, you know, and they're using military as like, well, I'm a military man, you know, that sort of sneaky way in, and they're doing anyone but Obama. So they're not really talking about Mitt Romney, but they're making them feel like, look, we just can't vote for Obama. We can't have any more of Obama. Like, you know, they're just focusing this anti-Obama sort of campaign at the undecided.
That's the excuse, but Ron Paul ran on the idea that he wanted to be the president, and he was selling his supporters the idea that they were going to use this delegate strategy and that he was a serious candidate for the office, right? So what about his supporters who don't like to be identified with mainstream Republicans and will say that people like Mitt Romney are just as bad or close enough to just as bad as Barack Obama from their perspective?
Yeah, I don't think they're undecided. I think they've decided that they want Ron Paul. They just won't get to maybe carry out their decision. But I think the Boykin thing, I think that's what the Republicans are trying to do, is go after the undecided.
They're trying to, well, but isn't, now, isn't
they,
this
what
strangely
can they do with
similar?
The Ron Paul people?
But
they
what
can't
can they do?
Them
how can they get,
to Romney? No
how can
way.
They get any of this going when, isn't that what they've been trying for, didn't they literally try that playbook, like, right around this time in the 2008 cycle, when they're trying Jeremiah Wright again, like, trotting him out again? Like, didn't they try that? And, I mean, because actually that Boykin guy in that speech, the part that we didn't play, he actually goes on about Jeremiah Wright, you know, which was like Obama's pastor, so what, you know, and now, you know, like, Obama has kind of avoided having, like, someone who is, like, seen as a religious mentor, because, I mean, you know, I'm not even sure it's clear that Jeremiah Wright guy was really much of a mentor to Obama, so much as just a guy who was up on the altar when he, to a place he went to services sometimes, you know, and he's trying to make these, like, connections with all these people. I think it's mostly, you know, nonsense.
Yeah, basically just the biggest concern is, you know, how can these people, if they were smart enough, go out and get some other information about Jeremiah Wright and, you know, get a better understanding of what the other side is and what the other options are.
Yeah, for sure. So do you think you're going to get a Nexus 7 from Google? I know we've been talking about those a lot on the podcast, so we won't spend much time on it, but are you going to get one of those?
Probably not.
No?
No.
All right.
I love my iPad. I have.
No, yeah, you have an iPad too, and it's really good. Yeah.
For anything else.
That's true. You don't have a need for one. It's just that you. I know your dad is making Android apps, and you know that you might want one to test on. So that's just that would be the only reason you would look at a Nexus 7. They're supposed to have pretty good hardware for an Android tablet.
I guess I just don't like the idea of buying a unit and then not knowing how to, that you're getting like old software. Like, can you upgrade it yourself on this tablet? So you can always have the recent software? Or like, if he's developing on ice cream sandwich, do I have to get an ice cream sandwich test unit?
Yeah, you
and,
know,
like, buy it now versus wait till, you know, I don't know, and he's ready to launch it or whatever, which might be a while. And how fast is the development cycle on Android? And I don't understand that market at all.
Yeah, it's different. You know, right now, there are still a lot of phones that are on like some kind of Android 2 version, but the ice cream sandwich one you're talking about, that's 4.0. And like that Samsung Galaxy 7 2.0 or whatever, or Galaxy 7 2 or whatever that thing is, like that thing has Samsung's version of ice cream sandwich, Android 4.0, but the Nexus 7, because it's directly from Google, it has the latest version of Android, which is 4.1 Jelly Bean. It's newer than ice cream sandwich, and it's the I guess it has like a front that's a little bit like a Kindle Fire. It has sort of an interface to the Google Play Store. They're really positioning it in that same kind of niche, I guess. But it has, I think, a lot faster processor and stuff than that thing. So that's going to become maybe the popular one for a little while. But then the Android market does iterate really fast, and there's new models out. And you know, like Samsung, I mean, they have one now, and it's somewhat comparable to the Google Nexus 7, but they're going to have to up the specs on theirs to stay competitive. So, yeah, these things keep iterating. And then, you know, that was the thing is, I think your dad has a Samsung tablet, right? So we're not even sure if he's maybe writing to the Samsung interface a little bit in some way, because they have an interface. I've told you what it's called, right? Do you remember what I told you it's called?
I don't.
TouchWiz.
Oh.
That was Samsung's interface brand for Android for a while anyway. I don't know what their current stuff is called, but I'm pretty sure that was their brand.
It's horrible in so many ways.
Yeah, I mean HTC Sense and Moto Blur aren't very good names, but it's hard to get much worse than TouchWiz.
If you're an international company, please get an agency that is in the U.S. with reputable services, because translation is very important.
Don't you think it's incredible how many really big Japanese and European companies, just like car companies, have very poor commercials more often than not? You know, like even with popular products and stuff. Like, yeah, there's definitely an issue with that kind of stuff, right? You think these big corporations, they could definitely hire stateside talent, and maybe they do even, but it's also a matter of probably implementing the right kind of like strategies to satisfy the type of the type of market, and you know, working and actually listening to people who really understand the market.
And now I'm going to play a little drum solo.
A few years ago, I think it was, at the time, it was a Firefox plugin called Better Gmail. You ever heard of that?
I have.
Well, I'll tell you what. I haven't used it in a while. It was superseded by new versions of Gmail, and it may still be maintained, where, you know, you have to keep updating it, because it uses basically JavaScript hacks, right, to change the interface of Gmail, more or less. And I think the JavaScript hacks, at least originally, were based on Grease Monkey scripts. But anyway, it's like front-end JavaScript, right, because you can kind of apply your own JavaScript to websites from your end. You don't just have to download it from the website. and use theirs, or, you know, because the same way you can turn it off, you can also inject, you know, your own and give your own flavor to the site. There were, you know, ways to change your interface for Google Reader and other stuff for a while, but Better Gmail is, you know, one of the better known plugins in this area. And okay, so if you wanted to have, I think, hierarchical labels on the side, then you had to put slash, you had to put like, you had to make them hierarchical. You had to make, like, in the sense that you had to go, well, for whatever reason, I don't know why, I have like all these labels in my Gmail that start with a certain letter. Maybe because that was like, the letter was like a top level category, and then I had other levels, but it's, I have all these ones, D/accounts/stuff, and then I have D/sites/stuff, and then I have R/mailing lists, O/statistics. I have no idea, why do I... There's some reason why that would help me organize my folders using Better Gmail. But then that thing, I mean, it breaks, then maybe it gets maintained, but who knows what features are kept up. And you have these stupid looking hacks in your Gmail. Now, I think there are actually, they actually have some sort of official support for it in Gmail now, but it's not for the way I used it, and it's just a mess, you know what I mean? So I'm just saying, those kinds of plugins are stupid to use. You know what? Like, WordPress plugins are stupid, too. You see all these people, it's like, oh, my site is so screwed up because I put essential content inside data saved by a plugin, and then the plugin broke, wasn't maintained, stopped working. I stopped wanting to run it, was too expensive for resources, was insecure, got hacked, all these things. People wanted to stop using these plugins. Don't start. Don't use any stupid plugins. Like, I guess, like, you know, if there's some plugin that, like, does some amazing thing you really want to do, like, whatever. But, you know, if you have a Flash Player plugin and you're playing video with that, then as soon as that plugin breaks, you know, your videos break on your site, you know, like... You have a plugin for, like, you know, that makes, like, graphics, or that stores your photos. You have some gallery plugin that now you've got all these pages that'll break and look terrible if they even, you know, if anything, like displays. Actually, it'll probably be a bunch of gibberish because it's those broken short codes, you know, like these stupid plugins that allow, like references to assets like photos based on short codes that are specific to that plugin. Those fucking short codes break the second the plugin's turned off, and now you got all this shit on your website, and your fucking website looks retarded. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Websites, you know, like, a lot of people just have these broken websites, and they need to upkeep all these stupid plugins, and people over-rely on plugins, you know, but I mean, even... Like, I could see, like, plugins for stuff like podcasting maybe makes sense, but, you know, for, like, core content features is dumb. And even podcasting is not that great. Like, now, if you want a podcast, just get a feed burner feed. Just go to the settings and put it so that it'll look for audio files or video files or both, and then you have a podcast. That's all you need to do, you know, and just put the links to the files in the body of your post. That's how I do my podcast now. My old video podcast, though, I did actually have a podcasting plugin. So I still have a podcasting plugin running there. Now, I probably could figure out how to take there might be hidden fields that I can use to turn the plugin off and write my own little mini bit of functionality on a custom theme that I'm doing, but that's probably somewhat geeky. I don't. The average person is either stuck with the plugin permanently or has to just break their site like a bandit, you know.
It's horrible when that happens.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, plug-in authors don't have that much incentive to keep their site up because they're not, I mean, not a lot of them make that much money. I think some people make some money from themes and stuff like that, but it's not a consistent basis. The market is sort of corrupt, and it's a low information market. There's a lot of bad themes. People will take really bad, really terrible themes, and then just like try to shoehorn them into doing what they want, not realizing it'd be so much easier to just learn CSS and HTML and just make a little site, you know, like, and just, you know, bolt it onto WordPress, very easy. And instead, they'll use these really terrible, I'm not going to mention them. There's one that comes to mind really strongly, and there's others, but there's some good ones. There's like, I don't know if it's really kept up anymore, but Thematic, isn't that, that's the one I have on your site. That's a really good theme. Ian Stewart, he works for Automatic now, the company behind WordPress.com. So, you know, I don't know if he really, that was like his like theme for a while, but like, you know, I mean, there's some of those things really work, but ironically, like Thematic, that was always a free theme. And maybe there's like a premium version or a way to pay, but you could basically get the basic code for free. And it was like, you know, a lot of the really bad ones are paid ones. And people don't know they're bad. They assume that there's a value. Do you know what I mean? There's not a well-developed market in that area. There's not broad enough expertise. I don't know. I can't. You know what I mean, though? It's like, you know, there's like basic web consulting, but there's not enough knowledge about WordPress and CMS for people not to basically get hoodwinked and then not want to deal with stuff, blame the technology instead of the idiot they hired, you know what I mean? And there's not a lot of talent for on web development. There's this person that a lot of people know in Cleveland. People talk about like, she's this like good web designer, and I want to throw up on the screen when I look at the stuff she makes, you know. And I don't even know her, I'm not gonna mention her name, but like just like a total hack. And then I have all these people, otherwise smart people, that tell me, oh, she is a really good designer. Yeah, she sucks. I had an idea for a new segment. Movies I haven't seen.
It's like a million.
Right. Right, because like people are talking about movies this summer. There's all these superhero movies. There's a remake of that old 90s Uma Thurman movie, The Avengers. Do you remember when Uma Thurman was in a movie called The Avengers?
Yes. She had like a purple suit on.
Well, isn't this a remake of it?
Mm-hmm.
What?
I want to go see it, and you don't want to go see it.
Well, I don't... Yeah. I don't want to go see it. Yeah,
there's parts of it that were filmed in Cleveland.
And I saw those parts on video from people's like Twitter accounts and stuff, like last year. I've kind of moved on.
So last year.
It
was right around this time actually when they were filming.
I know, like people have raved about it, but I've heard some critical reception too about it that it's pretty hollow. It's as hollow as you would expect like a superhero movie to be. It just doesn't really sound that good. Did you see Captain America?
I did not.
Did you see Thor?
No.
Did you see Well, this is sort of, they haven't had a Hulk in a while, but those two were terrible. The first one I saw, and it was terrible. And then the second one was supposed to be a little better, and then when it came out, people pretty much hated that one, too. So, yeah. And then, like, the Dark Knight Rises.
That was good.
Really? You think it looks good?
Yeah.
What looks good about it? It's like they just blow up a football field and then there's a guy in a gas mask.
I like the last one.
Hmm. I did too. I did like The Dark Knight.
And so I think maybe I'm just being more hopeful than anything.
But is it good? Yeah. I think I don't think Christopher Nolan took enough of a beating for how bad Batman Begins really was.
Well,
and so
in the past.
I'm afraid not. Yes, The Dark Knight was one of the most popular, you know, superhero movies in a while, and it was a big success, and a bigger success than Batman Begins. But I don't know if people really made the distinction of, like, you know, I don't know if they made the distinction. That movie was terrible. Batman Begins is terrible. We saw a few scenes of it last night.
Yeah, it was on. And it was funny because it was on mute. And it was like, bah, 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 bah. And
yeah.
Dan said it was just a bunch of Christian Bale talking like this.
And it's
how
all,
he talks is Batman.
It's all dark. The whole movie's dark. And then there's Katie Holmes, who I'm not a big fan of. So I don't know. I don't know what they're gonna do with the Dark Knight Rises, and then people seem to care about the Spider-Man movie too.
They do.
Spiders are really kind of nasty. I mean, you know, there are a lot of spiders. I mean, you know, we live in an old neighborhood in Ohio, and there's all these. You know, I mean, there's a lot of. There's a lot of bugs in this part of the country, and there's a lot of spiders. So if you go into the garage or something, there's just, like, there's an attack of, like, you know, arachnid monsters, you know, trying to, like, poison everything with their venom, right?
Well, not all of them are poisonous.
No, I think they actually are all poisonous. It's just that most of them don't have enough venom to do that much damage to humans that much of the time. Pretty sure all spiders are certainly enough to matter are pretty much poisonous.
Well, yes, there are lots of spiders out.
They're a pestilence. And now there's a movie celebrating the merger of a man and spider, and they already had a series of movies, and those got worse each one. What?
We need to warn children to stay away from spiders. They don't want to get bit by a spider because you will not turn into Spider-Man.
Yeah, kids, I would recommend against spiders and Spider-Man because you're going to, I mean, you're talking about a guy with a very awkward kind of outfit. It's going to be really easy to see in the dark. Don't you think most confrontations are going to take place in the dark? Like, Batman has cables that he shoots out. Like, you know, he can take, you know, he can throw hooks around things and stuff. And then, you know, you don't need that webbing thing. It's weird. And then they got to always make a thing out of that. Like, I heard this movie, because again, this is movies I haven't seen or whatever. I heard that this Spider-Man tries to make it like a mechanical web or something instead of like a bio additional cyborg, whatever the hell Spider-Man is supposed to be in the other movies, or, you know, and I don't know what, I have no idea what it says in what books, right? They have all those comic books. Now everyone, I guess, is supposed to, like, people certainly, comic book culture has mainstreamed a lot, hasn't it?
It really has.
I was never in or on the fringes of comic book culture, so I don't really know. It just seems to me that people discuss it like more like a mainstream phenomenon now. But do they really sell? I don't think they sell. I don't think there's been like an uptick in sales, has there? They have like digital now and stuff.
Well, maybe not necessarily comic books, like in a comic book store, but
yeah.
Definitely the industry with Comic-Con and probably online and web-based comics. You know, you can get your comic and art out there a lot faster.
Well,
and,
that's the thing.
You know, some people like the graphic novels.
Web comics, though, you think like the Oatmeal or Penny Arcade or all those different web comics out there that people have. There's a Tom the Dancing Bug. There's some more political type ones. Tom Tomorrow. That one is really good. Sometimes like, but like those are you know, web comics. That's like a thing like that they do. Like, do you know what I mean? That's a genre now. That's its own genre. That doesn't really fit in with the Comic-Con culture. The Comic-Con culture is like movie and comic book nerds, but now it's the ones that can afford to, or the ones that are currently working in the industry, not people who just show up. And I guess that one in Chicago really declined over the years. Because remember, you know, our friend Ross, he was a big attender. Now, granted, he's from Michigan, but he's gone out to L.A. and Hawaii before, so I think one of those times he was going out for Comic-Con, to go down to San Diego to go to Comic-Con, I think he's done some of the other stuff, too. I'm not sure which ones, but he was going to Chicago one for a while, and then it seemed like he stopped going, because, I mean, he was like, you know, he told us about it when he's going. Then he hasn't gone in a while, I think, because I guess somewhere around 5 years ago or longer, that thing just got really lame all of a sudden. But now it's like there's all these regional ones. Was that one? I don't think that one was ever a rival to the Chicago one. But was that a number two or number three? I don't know. But you know, that was something, and now that's nothing. So, but there's all the there's like one in Austin, and there's one in New York, you know, and I think they're decent sizes. Because I think, hasn't the San Diego Comic-Con, it's like overwhelms the city now. And it's people that are either like, I guess it's some people's Burning Man in that they, you have to plan a lot. You have to outlay a lot of your money. A lot of people that go are just dedicated kind of normal people. But you have to save a lot for that year to like be able to put all this together. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, and it's like a week and it's really intense and you're just, you know, doing it. But you're just going and seeing the stuff that you love and enjoying, you know, the art and the people and stuff. But I mean, you know, it's like you really have to have that as a priority. That has to be something you really love now, I think. It's not for casual people. And that's like, it almost seems like now it would be the time they'd be attracting casual fans too. You know what I mean? Like, this would be, it'd be people that would stay a night or two, go to an event or two. Like, but I don't know, you know, and it doesn't seem, it's, there's like, what percentage of people, because all the photos you see are people wearing costumes. So I can't figure out what percentage of people are in costumes there.
I know. I would say
70% of people at Comic-Con are wearing costumes.
I think that's one of the biggest reasons people go.
Oh, yeah, and good for them that want to do
more
it.
More so
I just
than
don't
any other conference, even like E3, you know?
Oh, sure. I just can't, like, I don't understand why people would want to wear a costume. Like, maybe, like, I guess I have a dinosaur mask and stuff. Like, it's not some foreign concept, but, like the whole idea of, like you want to dress like Spider-Man, and you're like, I mean, I don't know. Why do you want to do that?
Well, people,
I don't mean you specifically.
I know, they want to, by dressing up, they can easily tap into what it's like to be them.
Right.
So, you know, it helps with the visioning process of pretending to be Spider-Man or, you know, pretending to be somebody else and getting to live that out. That's kind of trippy, but cool.
But, you know, I don't know why don't people, I don't know why people don't why do people still care about superhero characters into adulthood?
I don't know. Reminiscent of that feeling that they felt when they were younger about first reading it or thinking how cool it was and, you know.
Do you really think those people are reminiscing or do you think they're really there in the moment, like, you know, thinking it's just as cool now?
I don't know.
I'm just asking for speculation because I understand
know.
You were, look, and look, I'm a 33-year-old man who is a big fan of baseball. Is that somehow absurd on some level? Very possibly. Very possibly. I'm looking I heard Bill Simmons on his podcast saying that, you know, there's only one or two players in Major League Baseball that are younger than him now. You know, he's like 43 or something. So, but you know, it is true. Like, you know, there's plenty of players about my age or older, but in like pro sports, but I'm getting the age where a lot of these guys are just, you know, they're really young. It's not important. I was never a professional athlete, so there's no real benchmark for me. But what I'm saying is, yeah, like why do I still watch sports? I don't think it's any, you know, it's no different, say, to like comic books probably. Baseball, it's a little boy's game. It's a little, you know, it's a kid's game.
Baseball?
In a way. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, sports are sort of for kids, you know, like organized sports, you know, like the adults play them. It's kind of absurd.
Why do you say that?
Well, I guess, you know, in terms of sport and fitness, there's no problem with like playing sports, but contact sports are very intense and very brutal and like, They're just like a tribal like training mechanism for young people. When they outlive their usefulness once you become an adult. You know, I was recently, I went through and put the podcast 1 through 10 on the feed so that they'd be, you know, on the current site. And, you know, the thing is, I saw that thing about your yoga posts and I was like, that was cool when you were writing about your yoga posts. So, is there anything like new to tell the audience about that? Because I bet like that if people had listened through the podcast, they were wondering where does that circle come around again?
When will I be writing about yoga?
You don't have to write about it. Just tell us about it.
Oh, what do you want to know about it?
Remember you had your thing where you wrote like day, you know, by day about the experience that you did? Like was that a yoga like every day kind of thing that you did for a while?
Yes. So I did yoga every day and you feel really good because your body gets used to being stretched and you get to breathe a lot, which is really calming and relaxing, and you get to do a lot of meditating, so it really de-stresses you and calms you. And it's just for me it was a life-changing experience discovering yoga, and it's, to me, it's just, now it's so much fun. And, you know, everybody has a different journey with yoga, how they arrive there and, you know, where you are each day you get on your mat. But for me right now, I'm really enjoying exploring and learning and growing. And I've noticed sometimes I have resistance to trying things and, you know, you just notice, well, why? Why don't I want to try that pose? And sometimes it's just for safety because I'm so sweaty and I know I'm going to slip. But sometimes I try it anyway and hold it for 2 or 3 seconds. So it's good. It's fun. It's my little Zen sanctuary. It's a good community. Usually you're surrounded by a lot of people who have very similar energies. So it's fun to practice in a community environment.
Has it been really hot in the heat wave? It's been so hot lately, relatively, right? Here in Ohio and a lot of the country.
It's been blazing.
America to our international listeners.
Yes. And it's been so hot, and the hot classes have been super, super sweaty. So, you know, you have to adjust. You know, it's just like in life, sometimes there's really sweaty moments, and you can't always do yoga the way you did the day before. So you kind of do it in the moment, which is really cool. It trains you to be really adaptable and to really focus. When you really focus and you really breathe in yoga, you can just do amazing things.
Yeah, well, you certainly seem to have a real passion for it, and I like reading the stuff that you did. So people that want to read about it, I have a link to a page on the site that searches for yoga on your blog, so
great.
So people can check the show notes for episode number 39 at djmcloud.com. And as you know, that redirects you to djmcloud.danieljmckeown.com. That's just how I have the website configured. Speaking of the heat wave, you know, we've been doing some bicycling out in the heat lately too. We're doing like these 10-mile round trips.
Yes, we just did a nice long bike ride. It's been really, really hot. So even if we go at 8 or 9 o'clock at night, it's still 88 degrees.
Yeah.
But we did get a nice night to ride, but we were pretty hot and sweaty when we got back. But yeah, we've been exploring our neighborhoods and taking our bikes out.
Yeah, we've been hitting the road.
Yeah.
Made a few videos of that. I've liked doing the cycling. But are we gonna get you a new bike? Like, do you want one of those carbon fibers? I think you should get a carbon fiber.
Well, I just drew a picture of a bike.
Oh yeah. You know what? We should use that for the podcast artwork.
Cool.
I really like your artwork. Do you feel like there's an element of pearls before swines of me throwing your artwork out in front of my audience?
No. I don't think your audience are swine.
Thanks for the vote of confidence in you listeners. Well, I know there are a lot more stories to discuss, including the coming war on people that wear terrible glasses. Do you think like there's gonna be? Do you think that there should be like protection? For a class, the class of people that wear really stupid glasses?
I don't know. I have to get new glasses. And
you're not going to get stupid ones, are you?
I'm not going to get stupid ones. But I need to get ones that I like so that I'll wear them. But with fashion these days, maybe I'll have to choose from her, the stupid type.
Do you think fashion has gotten that bad? Like, do you think, like, all... What are the worst... What's the worst glasses trends? Because it, is it Ray-Bans, or is it that people are wearing Ray-Bans? Now what do you think the worst sunglasses trend is?
I don't know. I think sunglasses are pretty cool.
Well, yeah, but there's some bad ones out there. Like, people are making bad choices about the ones to wear.
I think the novelty ones where they're, like, martini glasses or beer goggles.
Beer goggles!
They're, like, two glasses of beer, and they're, like, yellow.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's true, even to the point of the ones that are so affected with the 80s, like, curvature on the edges. I think those are pretty played out. Fucking stop with those. And anything by Ray-Ban, that's a shit kind of glasses. Like, you know, I don't know. I like my Smith sunglasses.
Yeah, Smiths are way cool.
Those are, I mean, yeah, they're not, I might, you know, there's probably better pairs, but I like the ones I have. So you heard about this guy, Richard Posner. He's this old judge who also teaches at the University of Chicago. And, he threw out one of the, intellectual property cases that Apple brought, I can't remember if it was against Motorola or somebody, but this is a guy who, I think it was Motorola. This is a guy who is really questioning to the media now, talking openly. Now, granted, this is a guy who has written articles and stuff before, so, you know, he's kind of a media figure, but he's really openly questioning the value of, like, patents in the tech industry. You know, because there's all these companies suing each other. I think it really puts a restraint on innovation. It makes, you know, a lot of companies that are trying to do things just pursue all these defensive patents, and that is going to take resources from other things. It takes these patent trolls, these shitty companies, will take, you know, their patents, portfolios, and just sue other companies. And the way that for a while, some of the big tech companies hadn't been suing each other because they had been either officially or unofficially cross-licensing patents. But then it's easy to crush small upstarts, right, doing that. Well, then even that kind of semi-truce broke down, and the patent trolls are getting bigger and bigger problem. And these are companies that are just shell companies that just sue people, and they don't make anything productive. And they're perfectly, they're allowed to exist. They're not doing anything productive. It's like a Mitt Romney kind of company. Well, I mean, because he was doing, he ran a lousy private equity company, Bain Capital, but it's a shady business where you're not producing anything, you're not creating anything good, you're not coming up even with, new ideas, new tech ideas. That's not what it's about. And so, I mean, when you got this guy, he's a Reagan appointee. So if you got Richard Posner talking about it, I guess this isn't one of those issues that falls down on the arbitrary, left-right paradigm. But I think it's definitely something that's going to get a lot of attention, maybe even from Congress, but probably not. They're pretty arrogant. What do you think about patents and stuff on court cases?
I mean, I think certain things should be patented.
Like what?
Certain designs.
What designs?
For technology.
Why do they need to be patented?
Because they create a unique business advantage.
Why do you need to create a unique business advantage?
So that you can have more market share.
What? But this is a public interest question. This isn't a question about what's in the interest of business. It's a question of what's interest in the public. This is what we're asking the government to. If we ask the government to abolish patents, I mean, we're asking that to be done in the public interest, not in the name of the companies.
but companies are part of the public sector.
The patents that are out there, the companies, that there's no evidence that companies wouldn't still pursue innovations to their advantage even if they didn't have patents. They would still want to have the best design. They would still want to create the best product. There's no real need for them to create a monopoly on their design. And any kind of excuse for the system falls away when you look at the trivial types of patents that are granted, like Apple suing companies over the idea that when there's a phone number on a screen, you can press it to dial it. Trivial, stupid things like that are patented. Like, to be fair, I mean, people have a lot of different views on it, and I am for completely, completely abolishing patents, and to never to be seen again, and abolishing every patent that exists now, and never grant another one. And I think that there would still be innovation, there would be more innovation, we would actually have people designing and creating products instead of suing each other and wasting time with that kind of thing.
What about people making knockoff products and selling them?
It's fine. There's no evidence that that Apple's actually been harmed by Samsung copying them. It's just cemented Apple's position as the leader, because Samsung's always copying Apple's last design, and that's pretty obvious when you look at their product. You've seen the Android products, the Samsung products. Mm-hmm. Like they're good products. But they're not quite where Apple is. They're behind. I mean, you're going to still be behind. Samsung is an enormous company with tons of cash. So in a way, they're resistant. It doesn't really matter. And this system doesn't work because Apple can't really just stop Samsung in their tracks. Samsung is going to find ways around it. They're going to fight it in court. They're a huge company with tons of revenue, a lot of money. So Apple might you know, they might have more money on hand, but when you have Apple and Google and Apple and Samsung and companies like that going up against each other, you're talking about enormous companies that are able to just keep dragging these litigations out for a long time.
Yeah.